The Strait of Hormuz ceasefire that was supposed to bring some stability to Gulf shipping is fracturing in multiple directions simultaneously. Iran has struck Bahrain. A commercial tanker has been hit in the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. and Iran have traded airstrikes. Saudi Aramco is resuming Gulf oil exports, which on the surface sounds like normalcy returning, but in context reads more like a high-stakes gamble that the shipping lanes are secure enough to risk major infrastructure. And the IRGC is publicly denying the existence of a U.S. communication hotline, which is the kind of claim that, if true, means there is no reliable de-escalation mechanism in place.
Let me frame the economics first, because this is where the pressure on policymakers becomes most acute. The Strait of Hormuz carries approximately 20% of the world's oil and about 18% of global liquefied natural gas. When tankers get hit, insurance rates spike, shipping companies reroute, and the premium on Gulf crude widens almost immediately. Saudi Aramco resuming exports suggests Riyadh has calculated that the risk-reward still favors moving oil now, possibly because they're watching the ceasefire deteriorate and want to bank as much revenue as they can before conditions close the window again.
The Iran dimension here is layered. Iran's assembly of experts, the clerical body that has constitutional authority over the supreme leader's succession and can theoretically remove him, has issued a warning to nuclear negotiators not to cross what they're calling common eyes red lines. That's a significant internal signal. When the assembly of experts weighs in publicly on negotiations, it's usually because hardliners are worried that negotiators might be moving too far toward compromise. The timing, while U.S.-Iran strikes are exchanging, suggests an internal power struggle in Tehran over how to respond.
And the IRGC specifically denying the existence of a U.S. military hotline is a deliberate provocation. If you're trying to de-escalate, you don't publicly invalidate the communications channel. The IRGC has consistently operated as a competing power center relative to the regular Iranian military and the foreign ministry. Their denial could be intended to undercut any diplomatic track the Rouhani-era foreign ministry faction might be pursuing. It's a way of saying, we, the IRGC, control the kinetic response, and we're not bound by whatever the diplomats are saying.
The Bahrain strike is particularly alarming. Bahrain hosts the U.S. Navy's 5th Fleet headquarters. Striking Bahraini territory is qualitatively different from hitting a tanker in international waters. It crosses into the territory of a formal U.S. defense partner. The degree of damage and Iran's stated justification for that strike will determine how the U.S. responds. If Iranian forces hit anything near the 5th Fleet's infrastructure, the escalation calculus changes dramatically.
Venezuela is also in the mix today, though from a different angle. U.S. officials are reportedly frustrated by opposition leader Maria Corina Machado's attempt to return to Venezuela after a series of earthquakes hit the country. Machado has been under effective house arrest and travel restrictions imposed by the Maduro government, and the U.S. appears to have wanted more coordination before she attempted re-entry. The frustration signals a gap between Machado's own political timeline and what the State Department believes is diplomatically viable right now. When your most prominent pro-democracy symbol makes a move that catches your own government off guard, it's a coordination problem that the opposition can ill afford.
And Bolivia this weekend became a case study in what happens when a country's economic buffers run out entirely. The central bank set a new exchange rate of 9.73 bolivianos per dollar, devaluing the currency by 30% after ending a 15-year fixed peg. That's not a technical adjustment. That's an acknowledgement that the reserves required to maintain the peg were exhausted. Bolivia's foreign exchange reserves had been declining for years as the government subsidized fuel and food, and the protests that preceded this decision reflected a population that had been watching the economic warning signs accumulate. The IMF's outgoing chief economist warning about insufficient global shock absorbers lands with particular force when you look at Bolivia right now, because this is what it looks like when a country runs out of them.
That IMF warning is worth taking seriously on its own terms. The context is that global debt levels are at historic highs. Central banks have less room to cut rates than they did going into prior downturns, and trade fragmentation has reduced the cooperative mechanisms that help manage prior crises. A 30% currency devaluation in Bolivia will raise the cost of imports, including food, for ordinary Bolivians almost immediately, and it will increase the cost of servicing any dollar-denominated debt the government carries. The pain will be felt at the household level before any macroeconomic stabilization takes hold.